This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
I'm Natalia Melman Petrozella, and from the BBC, this is Extreme, Peak Danger.
The most beautiful mountain in the world.
If you die on the mountain, you stay on the mountain.
This is the story of what happened when 11 climbers died on one of the world's deadliest mountains, K2. And of the risks we'll take to feel truly alive.
If I tell all the details, you won't believe it anymore.
Extreme, Peak Danger. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This program describes death and living with cancer. March 2024. I'm sitting in the car park outside the cancer centre, which is a place I have frequented many times for my chemotherapy treatment. I am about to go and have a PET scan because despite my post-bowel cancer all clear CT scans, there's been some little thing showing up on my lung. I'm Rachie Rampal and you're listening to Heart and Soul from the BBC World Service. Literally a month ago, I was free of cares, and then a month later, I'm back here again, seeing things like my funeral flashing before my eyes, and where will I die? Will I be in a hospital bed? Because I can't possibly be at home because the kids will be there and that will be grotesque and horrible. And who will be with me? And it's such a strange thing to be seeing those things on a Friday afternoon. These recordings are from an audio diary I've been making since early 2024, during the months I spent going in and out of hospital, waiting to find out just how soon I was going to die. May 2024.
When a PET scan lights up, that is an indication that there is cancer. The images on my PET scan have lit up. A bright light of cancerous nodule in my lung. So it's back. I honestly thought I'd dodged a bullet again, and it means something completely different to deal with a secondary tumour, which I've seen so many people have to deal with, and I largely haven't seen them survive. The main thing at the moment is I can't bear to look at the kids. I'd be all right with it all if I didn't have to look at the kids.
In 2019, I went to 10 funerals in 1 year, the death year. One of those funerals was for my mum. She died of lung cancer. My dad had died when I was a teenager, and mum and I were very close, so I went through everything with her. I took her to appointments at the same hospital I'm now getting my own cancer treatment. By the end of that year, I felt like I'd inadvertently become an expert in grief and dying. I'd read every book, listened to every podcast. I'd had every awful conversation I thought there was to have. I was acutely tuned in to the fact that we're all going to die. But then, in 2022, I was diagnosed with bowel cancer, and in 2024, that cancer had spread. Suddenly, I knew nothing. Back to square one. No amount of thinking or talking could shift the fact that I really, really don't want to die. I was raised by a Hindu father and a Christian mother, which actually ended up meaning that I sort of fell through the cracks of organised religion. My parents gave me space to choose my own faith when the time felt right, but I never did. I ended up with a vague understanding of both, but no deep connection to either of them. That feels especially hard at the moment. I'm a spiritual person, but what I really want is a faith. I want someone to turn up with a set of beliefs for me, a well-trodden path of trusted rituals and practices that could guide me through this. So I'm speaking to people with their own relationships to death, grief and religion to help me find what I can hold on to as I try to face my own mortality. Is it possible to prepare for your own death?
If we think that the first best hope of Earth is that you will be born into a community who love you, then the last best hope of Earth is that when you die, you will die in a community who love you too.
This is Kevin Tullis.
I'm the author of a book about Irish wakes called My Father's Wake.
Kevin grew up in Scotland with Irish parents. Wakes are a huge part of death culture in Ireland. Traditionally, they're a sort of social reception where friends and family can gather around the body of the person who's died. When we spoke, Kevin took me back to his early 30s.
My father was dying in the family house, pancreatic cancer. In the Irish wake tradition, you don't leave a dying person alone. And it's beyond the resources of one family. You have to have neighbours and friends. And it was about 5 o'clock in the morning, and I decided to go down for a walk to the beach. My 9-year-old nephew, Sean, ran after me, and he said, come quick, Kevin, he's going. I went back into the house, into this very small room where my father was dying. There were 10 people in the room, some of whom I barely knew. And so it was a part of me thought, my God, you know, why are you here? What do you want to see in the death of this man? He was very sort of emaciated at the time, all sort of skin and bone and the head at a funny angle and this incredible panicky breathing, which was actually terrifying. So it was at that moment that my aunt, Tilda, God rest her soul, she said, right, the five sorrowful mysteries. And it's just an old Catholic prayer. You'd have the same in any religion. Words that you know, the familiar prayers as a child. So she began to say the first verse. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee.
Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
And then the chorus then come back with Holy Mary,
Mary
Mother of God.
God. Pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death.
Amen.
This verse was sort of repeated and repeated. The noise seemed to go kind of louder and louder and louder in this really small room. It was a very powerful moment to ease the passage out of another soul.
I've grown up with some ritualistic traditions, but quite tokenistic.
Mm-hmm.
Part of this process, I'm asking the question, well, what rituals are important to people who don't believe or don't have those long-established cultural practices?
It is incredible that, for instance, my 90-year-old mother-in-law, she's never seen a dead body. She's English. Whereas in Ireland, if you're a 10-year-old child, you've probably seen about 4 or 5 dead bodies. I think the weakness in the English sort of protocol, death is sort of hidden. We feel that when people are dying, we need to lower our voices and pull the curtains across and let them die in private. So you either do this or else, in a sense, you stand and say, well, this is happening to me. Now, that can take a lot of courage. But what's happening to you has happened through history to everybody.
I consider myself an upfront, open person, but I haven't mentioned the C word to my children. The thought of them seeing my dead body. That was my line, my boundary. That was where I was more sort of, oh, no, I can't do that. But I'm really interested in this, that you would see a dead body from such a young age.
Yeah. But what are you protecting them from? If you can integrate death into life, one of the last parental duties of all is to teach your children how to die.
June 2024. I have come down to the plot to put some peas and some soil.
Just weeks before I found out that my cancer had spread, I took on an allotment. It's kind of hidden away between an old cemetery and a car wash in South Birmingham. There is ceremony in the world of the allotment. a set of actions with their own meanings and intentions, repeated over, each determined by the outcome of the one before. You plant, you tend, you harvest, you compost. You prepare to go again. My yearly ritual. It feels, if you'll pardon the pun, grounding to me. June is too late to put peas in the earth, but I'm going to give it a go anyway. I really like the fact that I can come here and hard work can be for nothing and it doesn't matter. Whereas outside of this space, I'm a gibbering wreck, I suppose, and that's quite a weird contrast. Oh, I got to have some of how I am here on the plot, this sort of faithful, hopeful, at-ease person. Why can't I be that person out there dealing with a cancer? Anyway, in the peas go. I've just been doing some work. My phone buzzed and it says you have a new message. Reminder, you have an upcoming general surgery appointment. Another little electronic bookmark that I've got to go and talk about. Mortality. Escape the UK and it's raining on holiday. Of course it is. I've been sitting on a balcony and all night in the dark there's been this sort of sheet lightning, insurance companies call them acts of God, flashing across the sky. But it sort of doesn't matter, like being out in the rain. Because if you stand out in the rain, I suppose it's like a full commitment to I don't care. It doesn't matter. You're going to get wet. You're going to get cold. And that's quite a liberating feeling, I suppose. So seething. Just committing to it. You are listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
I'm Natalia Melman-Petrozella, and from the BBC, this is Extreme, Peak Danger.
The most beautiful mountain in the world.
If you die on the mountain, you stay on the mountain.
This is the story of what happened when 11 climbers died on one of the world's deadliest mountains, K2, and of the risks we'll take to feel truly alive.
If I tell all the details, you won't believe it anymore.
Extreme. Peak Danger. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
June 2024. I've just got back from another follow-up meeting now that the cancer has been removed from my lung. The PET scan that I had earlier in the year that showed a cancerous tumour on my lung also showed lit up areas on my throat and my abdomen. The fact that they lit up is cause for a further look, so that's come as a bit of a blow, to be honest. I wasn't really expecting more investigations. And it is a bit of a roller coaster. There's something else that they want to look at. There isn't any freedom from this worry, really. And so it's just a case of sitting with this, not knowing all the time, waiting for answers that maybe you're never going to get.
Mm. ritualized actions can make abstract ideas concrete. I'm Ketika Garg. I'm a cognitive scientist.
Ketika grew up in India, which is where my dad was from.
To really understand that someone has died, there are a few concepts you need to grasp. There's irreversibility, and yet there's continuity, right, to feel better. And solidarity through time. Others have felt this before you, and others are feeling this with you right now. Mm. It's the only thing certain in life. Right? And I think that's what all the rituals in the world try to get at.
Ketika's mum died about 6 years ago. She went back to India for the funeral. Ketika also comes from a Hindu family. She's experienced some of the same death rituals that my dad did.
Hinduism is like different people have their own practices, but I can speak from my family and they do cremation. The funeral happens immediately, like the next day. The body comes from the hospital and it's all wrapped up and you kind of dress them up. You take them to the cremation ground. There's a pyre. There are people there go around the pyre before it's lit.
So and at that point is the body on the pyre?
Yeah. And you are putting pieces of wood log on it.
What was that like for you?
I just remember feeling, oh, this is happening. Yeah, so there's one ritual which really started me thinking of why we're doing all this. It's called Kalpkriya. You hit the head of the dead body with a stick.
What's the meaning behind that? Does that have a symbol of something or?
It's to liberate the soul before the body is born.
Wow.
It's a spiritual significance. But I think it's a proof that this person has died. There's no coming back from this.
After the cremation, when Ketika was letting go of her mum's ashes into the River Ganges, like so many people have done before, for their loved ones, for generations, Ketika noticed that her perspective on death was shifting.
We are in a chain of our lineage, and it matters in a way that we lost someone, but in the grander scheme of things, this is how it is. You're not special. You're not the only one. People have come and gone before, they will come and go after.
July 2024. My peas have shot up. The tendrils are just curling round and round and round and creating these incredible spirals of insistence. And that's another bit of hope, I suppose, isn't it? August 2024.
Hello. Morning.
How are you?
Hi.
So ultrasound of your neck.
Yeah.
And then there's possibly doing a biopsy.
Yes.
Yeah, it very much depends on what we see here. Really.
Two monitoring appointments in 1 week and my third scan in 5-6 months. I think I'm really expensive. I'm an expensive patient. I don't know what to make of that.
Turn your head away from me, please.
There's almost like a numbness. There isn't, because I'm sad and I'm worried. But I'm definitely not as desolate and bereft as I felt a couple of months ago when we talked about this new secondary cancer. So is that I'm just desensitised now? Is it that I'm learning to sit with it?
Turn your head over to me, please. Okay, Reggie, we're done. I'm not seeing any abnormal neck nodes that would warrant putting a needle into.
Okay.
I had a really good look around there and I'm not seeing anything that I'd be able to target with a needle, which is good. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, no worries, you're right. I'm guessing you've been through quite a lot recently as well.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
It's never ending.
No.
You've
made my day. I know it's your job to look for it, and it's not the order ruin my day for the need for purposes, but that's...
It's nice to give a little bit of...
It's a nice result.
And nice to meet you. Thanks a lot,
you
too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. What is all this? What do I do with this? I feel buoyed, I feel energetic, I feel relieved. But also, it feels like, okay, well, I'm all right for now, but now we just have to wait for more steps to some inevitable consultation further down the line where they'll say, oh, yeah, there is something there that we need to deal with. And it's like Schrodinger's cat. It's like I have cancer, but I don't have cancer. Or it's like I don't have cancer, but of course I do, because it's highly likely that another cancer will grow at some point in the future. But how can we know? And that's where the hard work comes in, isn't it? That's about where you just have to hold your nerve. That's what I'm learning. Felt this real sort of need to come down here and see what's what. Ah, oh, my peas are flowering, they're so pretty. There are pea pods ready to be picked. I've picked a couple. I'll leave the rest for the kids to have a go at. A year after Ketika's mum died, her family gathered for a puja, a Hindu ritual of worship.
There was a hymn about God. I've heard that hymn my whole life, but not really paid attention. But there were these lines. It was basically about humbling yourself to the gods. I think it goes something like, whatever I have is not really mine. It is yours. I don't believe in gods, but to me that is, gods are the embodiment of powers beyond us. It made me think that, yeah, she was my mother and she remains my mother in my spirit, but I did not claim her. She's part of a bigger scheme.
That's generous. That's so generous of you, I think. To not be trying to own her.
One family friend said to me that if you find your mother's hair in one of her clothes, don't keep it. Let it go. Because their place is now somewhere else. And that really stuck with me. This idea of letting go and the impermanence is so deeply rooted in Hindu and Buddhist philosophies. The impermanence, the next birth, the rebirth cycle, letting go. Your mother is not your mother. She has gone off to her next journey, and we should not hold her back.
September 2024.
Right, kids.
It's Saturday morning, and it's just a normal Saturday morning. I woke up, drank a glass of water, went into the bathroom. There were dirty socks on the floor of the bathroom, as usual. And I surprised myself because I looked at the dirty socks and for once in my life I wasn't angered by them and I was grateful for them. Nothing extraordinary is happening today. The children are playing and I think there's an omelette being made in the kitchen at the moment. It's been raining, it's just a day, but it feels really, really special. Grief can be especially acute in my life when I'm scared. There's a very base level, knee-jerk response I get when I feel panicked. Like with this looming spectre of cancer over me, where I just really want my parents to come and get me. I want them to scoop me away and tell me how to fix everything. So it feels kind of fitting that I've been speaking to people with the same religious backgrounds as my mum and dad. I never thought I'd consider having an open casket funeral, but I was so inspired by Kevin's openness and directness when talking about the dead, especially the responsibility of a parent to teach their children how to die. And I loved Kedika's explanation that in Hindu and Buddhist philosophy, letting go isn't just for you. It's a generosity to the dead, so as not to stand in their way of becoming a part of whatever journey or cyclical universality that lies next. I don't know if it's ever possible for me to be prepared for my death, especially not with the idea that I could die much, much sooner than I'd always imagined. But the more I've spoken about death for this documentary and with the people I love, the more I've sort of learned how to live, really. October 2024.
Autumn has well and truly announced itself. My lovely peas, the structure that was reinforced about a month ago, immediately blew over in a gale, and these what were beautiful climbing green peas are now a massive dried withered leaves, but I'm accepting of that, and they shall be reincarnated into something else via the top of the compost heap. Oh my gosh, I've just found a forgotten pea pod that's come from the bottom of the heap.
Here's another one.
Oh my gosh, there's dried peas inside. I guess that's
my seeds for next year. Wow,
that's so cool. Oh, brilliant.
You've been listening to Heart and Soul from the BBC World Service. If you have concerns related to this programme, you could speak to a health professional or find details of where support is available in many countries at Befrienders Worldwide, BEFRIENDERS.ORG.
I'm Natalia Melman-Petrozella, and from the BBC, this is Extreme, Peak Danger.
The most beautiful mountain in the world.
If you die on the mountain, you stay on the mountain.
This is the story of what happened when 11 climbers died on one of the world's deadliest mountains, K2, and of the risks we'll take to feel truly alive.
If I tell all the details, you won't believe it anymore.
Extreme, Peak Danger. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.